Okay. That was an incredible ad, that new ad. I want you to notice how there's now family members and engineers, and we have the website, the domain name, throughout the 30 seconds, and that's important because even if people get a small glimpse of the commercial, they still are able to look at that website domain name, and they're going to be able to go to it at any point during. So, you know, because of this ad, I mean, it really shows that we need more than just a rehashing of the grand cover-up. We need to galvanize the public as to the importance of the information revealed today and inspire action. I just want to mention a little bit about NYC CAN. It's a family member rescue worker and survivor organization, and it started as a petition drive where we collected 80,000 signatures for a simple yes or no vote on a comprehensive and fact-driven investigation of a crime that took place in New York City. We engaged the public directly, and we were successful in raising awareness. The Building What campaign, which started as a fax, email, and call-in campaign to the New York City Council, has further inspired people from all walks of life. We need people to remember. Rememberbuilding7.org. This specific part of the crime, the demise of World Trade Center Tower 7, also known as the Salomon Brothers Building, in the range of events of September 11th, is one that could be received visually. It touches the senses in a very unique way. And you will see later on today just how much more we can speak to people about facts concerning WTC 7. The next speaker I am going to introduce is a wonderful, beautiful lady that I met when we were verifying the signatures for the NYC CAN petition drive. Actually, I met Jane before that. I met Jane Policino at a hearing for the Guantanamo, the people that are being held in Guantanamo. And for it was a family member hearing that family members can go to and they could ask questions and receive information about specifically Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and four others that are looking to be prosecuted either in a military court or in a federal court. And I met Jane at this event where family members were receiving information from a range of lawyers from the military as well as CIA that was there. And I was asking some pretty provocative questions such as, what evidence do we have on Osama bin Laden? They actually gave us a list of 168 points that they want to prosecute Khalid Sheikh Mohammed on, and there's nothing in there. There's no substantial evidence at all. I asked a number of other questions that got the lawyers from the military a little upset. But after that meeting finished, I spoke with Jane very quickly, and she said, you know, that's some good questions you were asking. And then I happened to meet Jane when she volunteered for the NYC CAN recount. I see a lot of other volunteers in the audience today, too. And so Jane Policino lost her husband, Steve, on September 11, 2001. Steve Policino was born in Brooklyn, grew up in Hicksville, New York. After earning a BS degree from LIU at CW Post, he started his own business, eventually joining Cantor Fitzgerald and spending 15 years in the world of finance. Making the most of every minute, Steve enjoyed family, friends, and his greatest pleasure, his children. His kind, non-judgmental attitude made a positive difference in the lives of those who knew him. Steve managed to escape from the 104th floor during the 1993 World Trade Center attack, but there was no way out of the North Tower on September 11, 2001. He was 48, leaving his two children and his wife, Jane. Jane is currently volunteering at the Tribute Center in Lower Manhattan as a way of helping to process the event that is still, after all these years, impossible to believe. Everyone, Jane Policino.
OK. Okay, I have to let you know that when Ted said to me it would be good to be here, they're showing the commercial, and just to have the families here would make a difference. And so here I am. I also have to let you know that almost 9 years ago, the first therapist that I spoke to at the Cantor Crisis Center said to me, be ready for surprises. So here I am. Every day is a surprise. Ten years ago, I never would have expected that I'd come up and, you know, talk like this to anybody, or just somebody would have said to me, this is what you're going to be doing. You know, no way. But 10 years ago, I wouldn't have expected this kind of, I'm going to say, betrayal. I don't know if I would have said that 10 years ago, because 10 years ago, when it all happened, I didn't want to lose confidence in my government. I don't know if I really want to do that now. But when I come here, the first commercial they wanted me to do, too, and I was just like, oh, I don't know. I don't know what the focus is going to be. If they're going to come off saying conspiracy theory and all that, I can't do that. As a 9/11 family member, we've gotten a lot of labels as a group, some of them not too nice. So I just don't want, you know, talk about nut jobs. So you're just cautious about what you're going to sign on to. So I go to as many meetings as I can. Over these years, my focus has been my children. At the time, my daughter was 12, my son was 19. So they were grown up. And they were grown up to be on the computer, and I didn't know what they were hearing and listening to. And you just get by. You get by it in those days with blinders on. You tend to what's necessary, and you're thankful to women like the Jersey girls. I mean, Cheryl talked about the 9/11 Commission. That wasn't supposed to happen. President Bush didn't want an investigation at all. I mean, how dare he? If my husband was hit by a bus on the corner of Liberty, there would have been an investigation. Almost 3,000 people involved, and it just, no, we don't need an investigation. I mean, what's with that? So now you have this investigation, and it's all slanted, but people think, okay, we have all this information in a book. We can take 9/11 and put it away in the closet, which I would love to do. Personally, I would love to do. Unfortunately, I feel like as a family member, you just can't. You're faced with this all the time. And now when I see all of you professionals getting on board, I mean, I can't go over to my neighbor and say, oh, the building couldn't have collapsed this way. I don't have the knowledge to back up that sentence. But you guys do, and I feel much more comfortable knowing that you're behind all of us. So that's why I can be here today. I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. So I know there's probably lots of better things you could be doing on a Saturday. But, I mean, we were all robbed of our innocence. I wanted to pretend like we were safe by our government. I wanted to do that for the rest of my life. I want that for my children and my grandchildren. But I don't know if that's going to happen. It's kind of scary. But every day, every morning, I'm on the computer, and you just see something new. But so far, I've just taken it piece by piece. I tried to go to all those Misawi meetings. Meantime, a lot of the information is going over my head. And then, you know, other family members would say to me, well, what'd you learn? It's like, I don't know what I learned. It's just, you know, it's just so hard to process. So I just want to be here to give a personal face to the effort today. And it's 9/11 happened to all of us. We're all victims. We all witnessed it at some point, whether it was a still picture or what we saw on TV. We witnessed it. So we're all victims. And, you know, it's up to all of us to really want the truth. Whether accountability is the goal, I don't know. I think everybody needs their eyes open. And the rest of the world wants it more than some Americans. And that's baffling to me. You know, I just have enough energy to get me through these years. It's been managing. I've been managing, and it's been okay. I was personally affected, and I manage. It's like I have a disease, a 9/11 affliction. I'm not going to die from it, but it hurts every day. And these kind of things are just putting more salt in the wounds when you hear this. And honestly, I don't want to believe it. The first Christmas time at my home, of course, I wasn't putting Christmas lights up. I put in my windows. This is why I think my neighbors must, you know, I have to like tippy-toe around my neighbors. They're watching what I'm buying, and, you know, the whole victim's comp thing is another, you know, ball of wax, which, I mean, let's ask the government, why did they come up with all of these solutions for us? They wanted us to keep quiet. And now the people who didn't accept that fund, they whittled down to one person who's going to go to court. I remember when the 50-some-odd people didn't sign on, I was so thankful. Okay, I didn't have the strength and energy to do this. I was not in a position to turn down money that the government was offering to me. And at the time, oh, thank God we have this, thank God, and it's fast. And it's Cantor was involved in the 93 attack. And when Howard Lutnick told us, this is your only answer, that we're still litigating over what happened in 93. I mean, I had a family to support, a house to maintain. So I did what I had to do, but these families I was grateful for. The Jersey girls I was grateful for. I couldn't at that time give my voice. I mean, now I'm in a different spot. And it's funny because 10 years ago I would say, oh, 10 years from now, I'll be doing this, I'll be doing that. It'll be better in 10 years. And it really is just that you're managing to get through it. And you can't go around it, because that would be ignoring it. Manny mentioned the illnesses. I mean, just to give you a number, there have been at least 900, there's probably more than the last time I went to my computer, 900 people that worked on the pile. Volunteers, rescue and recovery, steel workers, you know, anybody that was in that construction able to move that pile of debris that were there weeks and weeks, 900 of those guys have passed away already. And it's taken 10 years to get a bill passed by Congress to give them some kind of, they couldn't work anymore, so they're without health insurance. It's not done, it keeps happening. So how can I not just come up here and show my face? It's a small thing based on the work that everybody else is doing. I mean, we were all affected by this. I mean, hopefully you can, you know, make it change my life personally. So hopefully your lives have changed. And the fact that you're here means that it has. So I'm glad for that, and I couldn't be more grateful. Thank you.
Okay. The next family member I'd like to introduce is someone who I met at an anti-torture event, Judson Church in New York City. Just so happened that she asked a question of the panel that day, and she mentioned that she was a 9/11 family member. And after the question and answer session, I went over to her and we spoke. And it just so happened that her nephew, the brother of Adam, who's the victim on September 11th, her other nephew, the brother of that nephew, Don Arias, I actually worked with in the Air Force for a time. So we had a unique connection there, and we had some very interesting conversations. And I'm so eternally grateful for such a wonderful lady to be a part of my life now, because I learn from everybody. I learn from especially the family members, because, you know, we can relate, and especially the family members that are in the know about the cover-up and the omissions and the distortions, because we're still a bit traumatized by the fact that we lost loved ones and we've been viciously lied to, and there's still no justice. And Valerie is someone who's fighting for that justice. Valerie Luchnikovska was head of her own public relations firm, specializing in internal finance and economics. More recently, was a founder and the executive director of a nonprofit of international architects dedicated to excellence in architectural principles. She has a master's degree in politics of the world economy from the London School of Economics and Political Science. Since losing her nephew, Adam, in the World Trade Center on 9/11, she became acutely aware that by far the largest number of lives claimed by modern wars are civilians, leaving lasting damage to societies and leaving behind increasing numbers of family members around the world to cope grief with grief, anger, and long-term psychological scars. Since 2002, she has been a member of the only 9/11 family group dedicated to peace and has been speaking in person and to the media here and abroad and lobbying Congress on civil liberties, Iraq, closing Guantanamo, and releasing or bringing the detainees to trial in federal courts. She is also an advisor to the board of Park 51, the Muslim Community Center, and prayer room near Ground Zero. Everyone, Valerie.
I first of all want to make it totally clear. Some of you may have seen my face before because I've done a lot of work with the organization that that Manny alluded to, the September 11th Families for Peaceful Tomorrows. I'd like to assure you that I am not here on behalf of that group. I am here as an individual only. Okay, got that out of the way. I also want to thank Jane, who reminded me of some of the journey that I've been through. She reminded me about how I could not believe that my government could do certain things like attack the people of Iraq. I was just incredulous at this, and I went through a life-changing experience when that actually did happen. In fact, I was in Italy at that time. I was on a speaking tour of Italy, invited by a peace group there, Tavolo della Pace is the name of it, and I was going from, I think I did about 10 towns in 10 cities in 7 days. And I spoke at many city councils who wanted to pass resolutions against the war in Iraq. And we managed to get that done in a number of, in most of the cases. But that last night, before it was on the weekend, I was speaking at a monastery in, I think it was, trying to remember, I can't even remember, it was in Siena. There were so many cities that I went to so quickly. And I was on a balcony with a Muslim woman. She and I both spoke, and there were a couple of monks on either side of us, and there was a large crowd in the plaza below. And I stated unequivocally that the next day, when there was to be an announcement from my government, I stated that my government could never do this. We could never go to war. And the next day, Bush declared war. And I went through, it was the worst kind of hell since a couple of days after 9/11, when it was one of my last trips to a victim center in Manhattan where I live. I'm the only member of my family who lives in Manhattan. And on that last trip, which was 1 o'clock in the morning on Thursday after September 11th, I was still looking for the Red Cross lists of the people who were, well, at that point, no one was coming in injured anymore. It was only bodies. And the last list that came in that I lunged for was a list of body parts. I felt I was sinking through the floor. There was no hope. And I felt that way again when war was declared in Iraq. So many families like mine, like Jane's, like Manny's, like so many others, so many families left broken, scarred, angry, horribly angry, grief-stricken, so many of them all over the world. That was first what polarized me when I saw just a couple of months after 9/11 that we were invading Iraq. At first I thought, oh, we've got to retaliate. Of course we have to retaliate. And then I read in the paper how many casualties. And I know, I started again, thank God for the computer, I started looking up on my computer. And I saw over the course of the 20th century The percentage of casualties in wars from the beginning of that century right through to this century has gone from very, very low to something like 90%. War is no longer for armies. War is against the civilian population. We cannot allow this to happen. We all have to be involved. Even through just questioning actions. And that's what this is. This is a question. Building what? And what happened there? That's what I want to know. The Jersey girls were the ones to question our government and demand that we, well, they were demanding answers. I'm now at the point where I see people asking questions who were put down for asking questions. Is this my country? Is this the country that I was raised in? Certainly not. So it all comes down to who are we as Americans? I'm a first-generation American. I know what that's like. I was raised in the Polish-Ukrainian ghetto on the Lower East Side of New York. I had such advantages. I got into Hunter College High School, one of the best high schools in the country. No money, not a cent. Nobody had to pay a cent. Sure, I was ashamed of the clothing I was wearing, but I still got the education. And that changed my life. Now, what and who are we? We have got to at least be able to ask questions. We have to fight for the right to ask questions now. That's a horrible thing. No, we need answers. But let's start with the questions. And I'd like each one of you, I'd like to reiterate what Manny said. We need, if you can just give, never mind $250, give us $5 here for this effort to raise the question so that maybe someday we'll get an answer.